Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
This is the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. There are no martinis today. Not one, not two, not three. As most of you probably know, the shocking news that came out this morning, that Andrew Breitbart, the conservative blogger, head of BigGovernment.com, author of a recent book talking about his movement and what he wants to see in terms of changing the political landscape in America, conservative firebrand, actually helped to co-found the Huffington Post, a longtime editor at the Drudge Report, helped to get the Red Eye program off the ground at Fox. Someone who not long ago, actually less than a month ago at CPAC, was shouting down Occupy protesters with the slogans of behave yourself and stop raping people. He was a firebrand. He confronted people. And this conversation for the next few minutes will just kind of be free-flowing about our memories of Breitbart. And Jim, I know that he was an active person in the blogosphere, as you are, and just like everyone else, I know you're in shock this morning.
No three martinis today, but three thoughts in my mind as I process the utterly awful news and news that quite literally I found unbelievable when I first heard it this morning. Breitbart published the James O'Keefe videos in which he and the young woman had gone undercover as a pimp and a prostitute in those almost comical costumes to expose that Planned Parenthood had absolutely no problem helping people who were involved in committing crimes. And so there was in the back of your mind, you heard this. And Breitbart was so young and has such a mischievous spirit about him. It's like, I'm thinking this has to be some hoax. This has to be something that they're doing to demonstrate how quickly people will report disinformation or misinformation. This has to be something designed to illustrate how, you know, allegedly tolerant liberals would react to his death or something. And so before I responded one or two things on Twitter, but I actually called up the Los Angeles County Coroner's Office because I had to hear it from somebody official before I was going to really accept the news. And sadly enough, the coroner's office did confirm it. And it was, you know, the unbelievable was in fact true. Quite a few people had responded to that this morning, believing that it had to be a hoax, that there's no way a guy who's only 43 years old, a guy who had no visible health problems, and I'll get to that in a second, you don't see 43-year-old guys keeling over. That's not that much older than I am, and that's a horrific existential wake-up call to see someone pass away so suddenly without warning and leave all that. And so my first thought, everyone and Greg, at some point, we should lay out all the important things he did in his working life. But I wouldn't say that Andrew Breitbart and I were friends, but we'd spent some time together, you know, interacted a bit, did some joint interviews. And he came on the 2010 cruise, and so for National Review. And it's interesting, the National Review cruise kind of is this very recreational event, which you're hanging around with people who you're used to seeing in a very professional Washington environment. I brought my wife. Andrew Breitbart brought his wife, Susie, and their four kids, who are, at that time, I want to say like 6, 8, 10, and 12. They're all in that age, and they're all just four bundles of energy who are just bouncing off the walls. Just in a way, there's three boys and a girl. And just picture like four little mini Andrews, and you kind of have an idea of all of them. The world was slightly more likely to misbehave a little less than the others. But both in the hotel and on the bus heading over to the boat, they were just never doing anything that kids really shouldn't. But you just could kind of tell that these were kids that were always interested. What can we get into here? And it was kind of fascinating to see the provocateur and the commentator being the dad at that moment. And he was patient, but there was an exasperation that I am familiar with as a father. I remember watching he and Susie and just saying, I want to watch a sitcom about the Breitbarts. This was a reality show of a fun, wacky family waiting to be made about this family. And it was a family that was full of love. And as much as I think we're all really trying to grasp with all of the great work we won't see from Andrew Breitbart in the coming years, so everything else he had to say, everything else he had to do, there was a side of him, you know, that I just got a chance to catch a glimpse of. And I know that that's a family that has lost a wonderful, loving, father and husband there. And so obviously everyone will be keeping them in their thoughts and prayers.
That's exactly right. And as much of a tremendous loss as this is to the conservative movement, and it is, and we'll talk about that more in just a moment, obviously the biggest loss here is the fact that there are four still very young kids who won't have a dad. And that is tragic. It was very, very close with them and with his wife. I saw it said in a number of places today. If you know how passionate he was about politics, crank that up even more in terms of how much he was passionate about his family. So that's a very good way to focus today and going forward. Like you, I had some interaction with him. We certainly weren't close. He had, back when he was working for the Drudge Report, would come in and sub periodically to frequently for one of our talk show hosts. And so he'd get there a couple hours early and be there in the news bullpen, and we'd be bantering back and forth about what was on cable news. And one day he's updating the Drudge Report, and he says, I don't want this top story anymore, but I can't figure out what should replace it. So he's like, come over here, you can pick it. He let me pick what story that was a little below the fold on the Drudge Report would go up top. So he was very carefree, very unassuming for a guy who obviously rose to great prominence in the movement. He had time for everybody and just loved what he did. He loved the fight probably as much as anyone I've ever seen in the movement. Most people get all riled up, and he did too, but he loved to not only fire up the base and fire up the people on his side, but he loved engaging and exposing the lies and the hypocrisy on the left, and it just energized him. And as we've heard from some folks today, Jim, it kept him and consumed him to being awake about 20 hours a day, and that may have contributed to some of the health problems that eventually took his life. So just good memories, the few that they are, and certainly his contributions to taking on ACORN, taking on Planned Parenthood, going after liberal suppositions in general is going to be deeply, deeply missed.
Yeah, I guess kind of one last kind of thought on Breitbart, when he was talking about kind of, you know, giving a sense of his life story and such. This was not a guy who grew up living and breathing politics. And I think and as someone who I kind of would characterize as that way, there are things that seem normal to people in politics that are very abnormal. They are very bizarre and outrageous and ridiculous. And Breitbart just kind of came at this very common sense outside politics world viewpoint. And so the idea that, you know, in politics, it was kind of just accepted that ACORN had noble motives or something, that there was, you know, maybe they did some bad things, but they also did some good things. And Breitbart's entire mentality just rejected all of that and said, wait a minute, I think these guys are a bunch of crooks, and I'm going to set out and I'm going to prove it. And you can look at that. You can look at any one of the bits of journalism done by he and his sites. And it was, I think one of the things that was great about him was that he completely, it's not to say he operated without limits. I think that he did have sense of propriety and the truth mattered to him. But in the end, he really kind of had this sense of just rejecting a lot of the you know, he was outside the box, shall we say. This was a guy who did not necessarily accept any of the conventional wisdom. And it's a great reminder. And I mean, yeah, probably, you know, I mean, this is a morning where I think a lot of us are feeling very depressed and feel, you know, kind of wondering what kind of a world we can live in where someone like Andrew Breitbart can suddenly not be there anymore. As I mentioned not long ago, after Tony Blankley and Christopher Hitchens, it's been a very rough couple of months. But Andrew Breitbart would want us all to fight. Andrew Breitbart would want us to go out and be as pugnacious as he was, stand up for what we believe, expose the truth, put those who we disagree with, you know, expose their lies, expose their hypocrisy, and put them on the defensive because that's where they belong, and expose them for what they are. And I will attempt to do that after probably a lot of heavy drinking tonight. Greg, this is again, hard news to take. There are two things that have been reassuring and you know, revealing about the reaction to his death. The first is how much everybody from Steve Forbes to Rick Santorum to Mitt Romney to Donald Rumsfeld to, you know, people who you might not necessarily think of as being your you know, the first names that come to mind when you think of Andrew Breitbart fans. He had a lot of fans in a lot of different places, and I think everyone is just feeling awful and in mourning right now. And the other observation is that all of the usual suspects you would suspect, including Matt Iglesias, who I did not necessarily expect to be this way, are reacting in exactly the repugnant, repulsive, and soulless way you would expect them to. And so, yeah, it's just another clarifying moment, one that I think we could have done without. But this is the world we live in, Greg. Yeah. Happy martinis, everybody. Happy Thursday.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, just two final quick thoughts from me. I can't end this conversation without at least a brief clip from Breitbart from perhaps his most famous moment. This is last year, a couple of clips when he hijacked the press conference that Anthony Weiner was late for after Breitbart broke the story of his lewd Twitter photos. Here's just a couple of examples of how Breitbart engaged with the press, who decided that he was the bad guy in all this.
And even worse, he went to his Twitter page to claim that he was hacked. We only wrote the story after a sitting congressman claimed that his computer system had been invaded by a hacker. How is it revenge? The story played itself out in real time. There was zero premeditation involved in this. This is a legitimate story, and this is a continual attempt to blame the messenger.
There he is, just doing what he loved to do and loved to do best. And as you said, Jim, tragically, but perhaps an important reminder to us all that life is a gift and you never know how long it's going to be. And so he packed a lot into those 43 years, and it's a good motivation for us to make our lives count as well. So as you mentioned, a somber day. Hopefully we'll have a little more cheerier spirit tomorrow, but I think the mood today was appropriate. Jim, we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Amen, Greg. May tomorrow be better. It almost has to be.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks very much for being with us. Again, our prayers out to Andrew Breitbart's family, his wife, his four children, and his extended family and friends.